First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Friday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope everybody's weeks have been good, and we launch you into the weekend here on Sports Map Radio, First Name Sports. My name is Greg Frank. John Bellmer is our producer. As there's a lot of basketball to discuss on today's show. And gosh, what a hockey game last night in Raleigh, North Carolina. As game one of the Eastern Conference Finals goes to the Florida Panthers, 3-2 in, count them, four overtimes. So we will discuss that as well. But we do want to start with the report out of Philadelphia that Keith Pompey, our guy, who we've had on a couple times, nice guy, reporting that James Harden is, quote, expected to reunite with the Houston Rockets, as that has been a hot topic this week in the association as the Sixers were eliminated on Sunday in Beantown, which is the site of game two tonight of the Eastern Conference Finals, which we will discuss as well later on in the show. But much was made about the future of James Harden, who had a player option for, and still does, but the expectation is that he will opt out of the 23-24 season with Philly and hit free agency and is in line to return to Houston. Now, this is not done. Again, it is just May 19th. We got about 6 weeks, and this could be some hardballing on behalf of James Harden. Perhaps Daryl Morey gets very nervous and panics and gives Harden a big contract, and he stays with the Sixers. But it seems as if this is progressing, at least, in the direction, and this was kind of the report from Keith Pompey, that people around the league believe that he will head to Houston and reunite with the Rockets. And, you know, I really can't rationalize the move on Harden's part, other than he loves Houston, he likes the Houston strip clubs, and, you know, he wants to be back in Houston. And, you know, when athletes make these kinds of decisions, I think, and again, as I said, this is not finalized, but it just seems like we're heading in this direction. I always feel like it's just a decision that I can't relate with as somebody that just watches sports in hopes of, you know, my team's winning, and somebody that feels like winning is why you play the games. As Herm Edwards once said, you play to win the game. And I think that there is an element, and there's a group of athletes nowadays who don't play to win. And their lifestyle or, you know, interests outside of sports, but they still want to play the sport that they grew up with. That's what people were saying when LeBron went to L.A. Well, he's got a lot of things that he can do in L.A. and Hollywood that, you know, he can't do in Northeast Ohio. And those aren't basketball things, but he wants to keep playing basketball, so he'll go play for the Lakers. And all of those other factors are things that I can't relate with, I can't connect with, because I'm not living that life. I don't have that kind of, priority list. And so it's easy for me to say this just sitting behind a microphone talking about what appears to be a reunion between James Harden and the Houston Rockets. If I was a pro athlete, I would want to win. Like, that would be the number one priority for me. And that's where I just look at a move like this and think, well, what's the end game here? So you're 33 years old and you're going to go play 34 in August, by the way, and you're going to go play out. If he does get this massive 3 to 5 year contract, you're going to go play out what could end up being the rest of your career in a city that, you know, the current team you know, at best wins, what, 30, 35 games next year? And you're coming off of a season in which, albeit you weren't the best player on the team, but Harden won the Sixers 2 playoff games in the second round. Like, that's where it just feels so out of touch for James Harden is I understand that the same kind of Game 6, Game 7 doldrums reared their ugly head again, but he did play out of his mind in Games 1 and 4 in that series and helped the Sixers win 2 of their 3 games that they won in the series. So, that's the... Like, if I just had that kind of season, I would say, hey, let me keep going. Not necessarily stay with the Sixers, but given how close I was to knocking out the Celtics, who represented the East in the finals last year and might represent the East in the finals this year, the competitive fire in me would say, I want to keep going. I want to keep, you know, getting more and more of a taste of this thing. And it just doesn't seem like that is the thinking here, should it culminate in a deal with the Houston Rockets. And I also think, while all of that I just said about Harden and how well he played at times in that series against Boston, I think if you're Daryl Morey and the Sixers, you might need to walk away. Because if you look at what the price is going to be and what the term and what the money is going and how it's all going to look if you have to bring him back, then you're essentially saying this is what we are locking ourselves into, a Harden and Embiid tandem, and we'll figure out the rest. You know, obviously Tyrese Maxey figures to be a long-term piece for the Sixers, and you know, certainly they're going to have, it looks like, maybe they can move his contract, but they're going to have Tobias Harris for one more year. So you're essentially running it back in 23-24 if you bring Harden back. And much beyond that, once you have to pay Tyrese Maxey, you still don't have a lot of financial flexibility with your roster. And so I think if you're the Sixers, you've been down the Harden road too many times before to think that if this is the price of what it takes to keep him, you know, a 3 to 5 year deal, $150 to $200 million, whatever it ends up being, then you have to be smart enough to walk away there. Had Harden just opted in to the final year of his deal, I would have thought, okay, you know what? Like, that makes sense. I get it. He wants to try it one more year with the Sixers, try and win. They probably are totally fine with him just exercising the option and playing in 23-24 on that option, and then they'll figure it out. They're very much year to year with the Sixers because they're a contender. That's what you're supposed to be if you don't win. And, you know, you're still a couple rounds away from the finals like the Sixers were, then you don't want to marry yourself to a core that you're a little unsure of if they can actually win the championship. And obviously any core, even as the second best player, that includes James Harden, you're going to have those questions. So I get why the Sixers would walk away if, you know, they do have, if Daryl Morey has it in, and that's the thing, does he have it in him as the president of the Sixers to step away? It does feel like this is almost this bidding war for James Harden's services between Tillman Fertitta and Daryl Morey, if this is how it ends up, where both guys have this affinity and love affair with James Harden, and, you know, we'll see what James Harden wants to do. I do think the frustrating thing from a Sixers element here, while I think you can argue it makes sense for them to step away, I think you can also say that I don't know how they get better in the short term because their salary cap situation is not super desirable even if Harden walks. It's not like they can go out and add a big player. The free agent class, by the way, is not that deep. And they don't have a lot of trade chips. I mean, they can't trade a first-round pick until 2029 because they gave up a couple of first-round picks in the trade to get Harden move off of Ben Simmons. And, you know, so then you're talking about Tyrese Maxey being your only real trade chip. And Tyrese Maxey, like, you shouldn't be wanting to move off of a guard that can score the way Maxey can and is 22, 23 years old. Because theoretically, if you move him, then you're moving him for a star that's much older. Like, people bring up Damian Lillard. Okay, well, he's 10 years older than Maxey. So how much better is Lillard than Maxey right now? And it better be a lot because Maxey's 10 years younger than Lillard. So it doesn't really make sense for the Sixers with whatever they opt to do. They're kind of low on options. And I just think that if the Sixers do move off James Harden, the reason why I still think it's the right play is because you don't want to latch yourself onto him for the contract duration that it looks like the Rockets might. So I don't really get it from the Rockets standpoint. I mean, John Belmer, I'll ask you because, you know, you've lived in the area. We're based in Houston. Like, is he bringing in – if you want to sell this as a PR play, a ticket sales play, a merchandise play – Is he bringing in that many more new fans? I feel like enough people have kind of already made up their minds on this guy.
Well,
right?
Also with the way he left Houston in general, people didn't like it. So I don't know. I don't know how much. I think he will put butts in seats. There's still people here that like Harden, and he's still a superstar.
Right, but those
player,
people
right?
liked him before.
Yes,
you know. So I don't know how much of a shot in the arm. It
but
really
that's
is.
The only incentive you bring. I mean, you already have a guy who wasn't like a big-time leader, and you've got these young guys
who
need leadership. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
And so I guess it just comes down to Tillman Fertitta likes him, wants to pay him, and he likes Houston, and I don't think that's a good way of running your team.
He and Daryl Morey, they've got this weird...
Right, it's like this love triangle now, and, you know, I guess we're going to find out where James Harden's allegiances lie soon enough. But it certainly seems like all indicators are pointing towards him returning to the Rockets. We'll take a timeout and we'll come back. Let's talk about the basketball still going as the Denver Nuggets claim a 2-0 series lead in the Western Conference Finals. They win 108-103 over the Lakers last night in Game 2. We'll discuss on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
2-0 as the series shifts to Los Angeles. The Nuggets are halfway, I guess more than halfway. They need, 16 wins to win the NBA championship, and they've got 10 of them now. But halfway to the victory in the Western Conference Finals Series as they win last night 108-103 at Ball Arena. They remain undefeated at home, 8-0. The Nuggets now are in the postseason. And, you know, I use the expression path to success a lot as a, you know, preference for me as far as, like, the more paths you have to success, the more likely you are to win. Like it's kind of common sense when you think about it that way. If you can win in a lot of different ways and you're not reliant on one path or one player to get the job done each time, you're going to be more dangerous. And I think that last night was a different kind of win for Denver than Game 1. Game 1 was a slugfest, a shootout. Nikola Jokic was ridiculous. And they win at 132-126. Last night was at times a bit of a slog, and the Lakers weren't playing their best either, but had leads, and then late third quarter, early fourth quarter, whenever it was almost like the Nuggets just said enough. And, like, Lakers were up 5 at half, and they were up 9 in the middle of the third quarter. And then the Nuggets started making shots, and by the end of the third quarter, they had it down to 3, and Denver had a big fourth quarter. So what happened last night wasn't, well, Nikola Jokic is just ridiculous. I mean, he had another triple-double. But Jamal Murray was by far the best player for Denver last night. And again, I think that speaks to the point of that they are not necessarily reliant on one guy must do X, Y, and Z, otherwise we are screwed. Jamal Murray finishes last night with 37 points, 11 for 24 from the field, and 6 for 14 from the three-point line. For his career in the playoffs, Jamal Murray is averaging now 25 points per game in the playoffs, which is more than the following players: Wilt Chamberlain, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal, Larry Bird, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving, Charles Barkley, Carmelo Anthony, and Oscar Robertson. That is ridiculous. And so when you have a guy like Murray who can take a game over with his outside shooting, and you also have guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Bruce Brown and Michael Porter Jr., and these guys aren't stars, but they can knock down shots. Like, you can't leave them open. And Porter Jr. was hitting some shots last night. Bruce Brown hit a few shots. And you're able to win a game in which Nikola Jokic goes 9 for 21 from the field. And as I said, he had a triple-double. But they came, like, Denver really just started coming at the Lakers in waves with mostly Murray, but a few other players hitting some shots. And the Lakers did not have a counter to that. And gosh, the reluctance to go to the basket down the stretch from the Lakers, particularly LeBron James, who was settling for jumpers 0 for 6 from 3 last night, was LeBron. And I saw this stat and I thought, wow. I know we never thought of the guy as a three-point shooter. He has missed 19 straight three-pointers in the fourth quarter, dating back to the second game of the first round against the Grizzlies. That's the longest streak by any player in the last 25 postseasons. We all knew that LeBron wasn't an outside shooter, and it didn't feel like the killer instinct, I'm a 6'9 freight train and you're not going to stop me going to the basket, was there last night. Anthony Davis wasn't good, and so then the Lakers are just kind of crossing their fingers that whether it's LeBron or somebody else, you know, Reeves or D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, the outside shots are going in, and they didn't make enough of them. So they're down 2-0, and I think undoubtedly my point about Denver just having more paths to success is true. And if the Lakers' high-end talent does not play better, if LeBron and AD aren't better in Game 3 or Game 4, this series is going to be a lot shorter than I thought. Now, the Lakers are going back home. They haven't lost at Crypto.com Arena in the playoffs. So, you could certainly argue, and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, there's the old adage, the series doesn't start until somebody loses at home. Lakers go hold serve and win their two games, and it becomes a best of three. But until that happens, Denver's in the driver's seat. These are two must wins for the Lakers just to get back on level footing. Because if we go back to Denver 3-1, with Denver having games 5 and game 7 if they needed it at home, in a building they haven't lost in once in the playoffs, and the Lakers would have to win 2 there, yeah, I don't see it. So, it, make no mistake, the Lakers must win the next two games to still have a shot in this series. And that's that. Now, one other thing I wanted to get to here in this segment. I started the segment talking about crediting the Nuggets. I have been very complimentary of the Nuggets in these playoffs. Having said that, I didn't understand why the head coach for the Denver Nuggets, Michael Malone, after the game last night, seemed to be pretty fed up with the fact that, oh, well, the Lakers put Rui Hachimura on Jokic in game one, and Hachimura started to defend him better. And it felt like a little bit more of the mainstream narrative leaving the game was the fact that Hachimura was a better matchup on Jokic, and the Lakers had figured something out even though they lost. And that seemed to bother Mike Malone. Here's what he said after the game.
To be honest, that was a national narrative was, hey, the Lakers are fine. They're down 1-0, but they figured something out. No one talked about Nikola just had a historic performance.
He's got 13 triple-doubles now, third all-time. What he's doing is just incredible, but the narrative wasn't about the Nuggets. The narrative wasn't about Nikola. The narrative is about the Lakers and their adjustments. So, you know, you put that in your pipe, you smoke it, and you come back, and you know what? We're going to go up 2-0.
Do you think that narrative changes tonight?
Well, I don't care if it does. You know what I mean? Because we know our narrative in that locker room. We know that we're not done. We haven't done anything yet. All right, you got to win a game on the other team's home court if you really want to do something in the series. And we know how great that team is, especially on their home court. So we're not celebrating. You know, this is not cause for celebration. This is a cause to continue to dig deep and find ways to be better.
Like, you do care if that narrative changes because you're the one that brought that up. You're the one that mostly unprompted was like, yeah, well, the narrative after game one was this. And listen, I have been long one to say, listen, we're all trying to do the same thing here, regardless of how big your market is. And I know Denver's kind of a flyover city, even though they do have all four teams, NHL, NBA, NFL, MLB. They're not the biggest of markets, and they can, in the national narratives and conversation, we don't often talk about Denver teams. But I'm not one to succumb to that, and just that's why I led the segment talking about the Lakers. I'm not one to just say, well, only five or six big brands in each sport really matter, and that's it. I do think that's lazy, and so I understand his point, but I would save that for, you know, talking to my guys in the locker room, maybe talking to my wife after the game or something. Because you come across as a little bit of a whiner when you just won game two of the Western Conference Finals. You're two wins away from the NBA Finals, and you're like, well, talk about us more. You know what happens, regardless of what, and this is why I try to avoid the whole big market, you know, only talk about the same five or six team stuff, because if you win enough, we're going to talk about you. And it might be a little bit later than you'd like because of how big your market size is. But if the Nuggets win two more games, they're in the NBA Finals. And I'd like to think that that's going to garner some more conversation about the Nuggets because they'd be one of two teams left playing. So just keep winning games, Michael Malone. That's how you change the narrative. You can't make people that do succumb to the big market bias that there is in sports media. You can't make that bias go away without winning. Knock the Lakers out, and everybody will have no choice but to talk about the Nuggets. Let's take a timeout. What a game last night in Raleigh, North Carolina, as the Florida Panthers win 3-2 in quadruple overtime. We'll get to that next. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.
Brent Burns with 15. Bennett keeps the puck alive. Kachuk with a shot. He scores! Matthew Kachuk with 12 and 7, 10 seconds remaining in overtime number 4.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
There's Kenny Albert last night on TNT in the wee hours of the morning at PNC Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina. The Florida Panthers, they just keep doing it as they win 3-2 in four overtimes. Matthew Tkachuk, their big acquisition from last year's offseason and a Hart Trophy finalist, gets the game winner. And the Panthers are three wins away from the Stanley Cup final. Another thing that I thought, and this is obviously telling because Florida was a low seed, but I heard this last night and thought, wow, you know, the more I think about it, that you're right. And you realize it. Florida has won now seven consecutive road games. That's ridiculous. They won the last three games on the road against the Boston Bruins. They won three games on the road against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And last night, they win the first road game of the series against Carolina. I mean, obviously, you have to win on the road in the playoffs. But it is impossible to win a championship when you're this low of a seed without doing it. And here they are, winning on the road seemingly every opportunity that they can get. And, you know, I watched a lot of this game. I was going back and forth between Eastern Conference Final Game 1 in the NHL and Western Conference Finals Game 2 in the NBA. And there was a lot of what I thought we'd see in this game last night in terms of very can kind of content to just be sound in your own zone type of play from both teams, where there weren't a ton of high danger chances, not a ton of grade A opportunities. Matter of fact, both of Carolina's goals were power play goals, and I thought even on the power plays Carolina did not score on, they were moving the puck well. And so special teams this time of year in playoff hockey games can really change narratives and change game scripts, and it felt like that might have been the case for Carolina, getting a couple of power play goals. But as the game wore on, we get a disallowed Florida Panthers goal in overtime that would have ended it a lot earlier than the game did end up concluding. And it just felt like both of these teams were relatively content to wait for their chance, and then eventually Matthew Tkachuk beats Freddie Anderson clean, and the Florida Panthers win again. And so, I guess what I'm saying is, if you would have told me, and I will continue to say this moving forward, if you would have told me that the game is going to go to overtime with these two teams, the way they play, it's not that surprising that we had a little bit more of a marathon last night. Because they're both, as I said, good in their own ends. They're not going to screw up a lot. And the goaltending for both teams has been good to get to this point. And I think that it also says a lot about the mental toughness of Florida. Now, I mean, you got to be very mentally tough to win on the road like they have all these times. But to have a 2-1 lead in regulation slip away because Sam Bennett takes a very bad minor penalty for boarding in the third period last night and Carolina capitalizes with a PPG. And then to have what looked like the game winner disallowed on a goalie interference call. And to still find a way to dig deep and win in a building in which prior to last night, Carolina had only lost once in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. And only lost one time in last year's playoffs at home, the Hurricanes did. So they've been good there. And it's the Florida Panthers, again, the lowest qualifier in the Eastern Conference, that finds a way to win. Again, Matthew Tkachuk, one of their best players, gets it done. I will say, watching it last night, and John Belmar, I'll ask you this, because you're not as much of a hockey guy, but I know you can appreciate the sport at least. When we have marathons like this, and I think that in regular season baseball games, we eventually saw the ghost runner rule come in, and we wanted to try and end the game quicker. Even Wayne Gretzky last night, at the third overtime intermission, was like, well, I hope somebody just scores because enough's enough. And that's the best player to ever play hockey. Do you think it's a bad look? Like, are these marathon games that we have, even when they're in the playoffs, and does it make the sport come across as boring?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. In the regular season, this doesn't happen, correct? So I guess I'm okay with it then. Because you're in a high-pressure playoff situation, you got to just decide the thing fairly.
I had somebody tweet me last night, after two overtimes, they should go to a shootout. And if they don't do that, they should play 4-on-4. And, like, I definitely don't agree with the shootout.
No,
the idea behind going to 4-on-4 is it would open the ice more, and so you would have, you know, your skilled forwards that are maybe faster skaters.
No, this doesn't happen enough to do that.
I think I agree. I think I agree. I think I'm okay with it. I think that to the casual fan, it might be like, okay, this needs to end. But I think, to your point, and you know, you're somebody that doesn't watch a ton of hockey, but you can still understand the abnormality of it.
Right.
To where you can say, I can live with this.
Well, from somebody
and in some ways, if you watch a lot, I actually appreciated it. Like, I enjoyed it. I was awake, and I was like, wow, this is because, like, you think every shot's going in, even when you're in the fourth overtime.
And from somebody who sat through an 18-inning playoff game this last year with Houston and Seattle in the that first series.
That's a good example.
Yes, I was ready for it to be over, but it was exhilarating. Like, it was still thrilling.
And,
that
was a 1-0 18-inning game.
That was a 1-0 18-inning game.
So
it doesn't happen enough for you to, change the rules for it. Correct.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I'm okay with it. And I think another point that we can make to piggyback off of this, I really don't think we're going to see this again in game two, because you would think that both these teams, it's a quick turnaround now playing all those minutes. Maybe that one or both teams game plan to maybe be a little bit more aggressive, to try and take some more chances and to not have the mileage pile up too much. As the series wears on. Because certainly, while it just got started, I think last night even, Vegas and Dallas, the two teams in the West, probably looked at that and said, keep playing, keep playing, keep playing. And again, we'll see what happens in the West final. But I do think that I would not be surprised if in game two tomorrow we saw one or both teams try and take some more chances. And, you know, if you get burned, Florida would be the team I would expect to maybe play with fire a little bit more, because the Panthers won the first game. If they want to open things up a little bit more and go for broke, they can, because they've gotten their split now of the two games in Raleigh. So we'll see if there's any strategic elements to game two as a byproduct of the marathon game one. And, of course, tonight I mentioned it. That is the first game of the Western Conference Final in the National Hockey League, as the Dallas Stars and Vegas Golden Knights. This should be an awesome series. I think that both of these teams coming in, I probably would have said that these were the best two teams in the Western Conference from top to bottom. And, you know, there's a good combination of top-end talent and depth on these two rosters. And it'll be fascinating to see, because clearly Dallas has a obvious advantage in goal with Jake Oettinger, how big of an advantage that is against the Vegas goaltenders, and how much of an advantage Vegas has elsewhere, because Vegas is the better team from a regular season point standings perspective. They have home ice in this series. So it should be an awesome Western Conference Finals beginning tonight in Sin City. And, you know, last night, I talked about it yesterday. I said this is going to be a good Eastern Conference Final. These aren't two teams that are big markets. These aren't two teams loaded with stars. But these are two teams that are built how you want to be able to build to win games this time of year, which is good in your own end, good goaltending, good defensemen, and opportunistic when you get your chances, as we saw with Matthew Tkachuk in the fourth overtime last night. Point blank chance, and he beats Freddie Anderson. Opportunistic Carolina was as well, with a couple of power play goals last night. Florida takes a 1-0 series lead. There is a nationally televised sporting event going on this weekend that I don't really think many people care about. I'll describe what that is and how we can maybe change that on the other side. First Name Sports on a Friday afternoon, Sports Map Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, well, it is the middle of May, and matter of fact, the third Saturday in May is tomorrow, which means it's Preakness Day tomorrow in Baltimore. And I will say, I've been to the Preakness twice. It was an easy drive for me growing up in South Jersey, 2-hour drive down to Baltimore. And it is a lot of fun. If you're, I'd say, you know, I think my old co-host Fred Fowler is a big horse racing guy. I think we drew the line at 30 for like an acceptable age to be on the Preakness infield. I mean, it is a cluster, you know what, in a party time down there at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore. And I had a lot of fun. I mean, I don't regret the two times I'm going. I don't know that I'll go back. Matter of fact, the first time I was on the grandstand. And, Belmar, I'll just show you. I'll show you my I got dressed up. I'll show you the horse racing get up.
What do you wear to a horse
race? So I have, like, a sport coat, a matching, like, one of those, like, 1920s hats that, like, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like,
yeah, so you were dapper.
I had a bow tie.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had a good time, but I do think as it wore on, over the years, I've become more and more aligned with the thought process that you're going for the experience. And so obviously, and I'd love to go to the Kentucky Derby, same thing, like experience bucket list type thing. But I think from a TV standpoint, the main reason we tune in to these races, I think most people are very much casual viewers of horse racing and don't really get that into it outside of the Triple Crown time. And some people don't care at all. Like Belmar, I'm pretty sure that's you, right? Like you won't even watch the Triple Crown horse races, right?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't care.
That's what most people, that's how most people feel about it. Now, I will admit that my interest has waned the last 5-6 years from a television standpoint. I think going to them is different. It's an experience. You have fun. But once I saw the Triple Crown with American Pharoah in 2015, that was why you tuned in. Because you wanted, there was this elusive accomplishment that hadn't been done in almost 40 years. And once it, I remember where I was when the American Pharoah won, and it was really cool to finally see it. But I also remember in the years following, and it's been almost a decade now, thinking, okay, I'm going to watch these races. I hope that they're competitive. I remember when Maximum Security won the Kentucky Derby and got disqualified after the fact for I can't remember what the violation was. And Country House ended up going up as the winner. Last year, Rich Strike was like 80-something to 1, and the horse won. So you remember moments, but ever since American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, I have never been like, I need to see this. There has never been that kind of allure for me as a, you know, very casual, like a sports fan, and casually, like, horse racing just pops up for these Triple Crown races for most people. So as it pertains to this weekend, I read a column by Dan Wolkin, kind of skimmed it, in the USA Today, and he was talking about the fact that we do need to make some changes and bump the Preakness back, because Mage was the winner from Churchill Downs at the Kentucky Derby a couple weeks ago. There, as is the standard protocol, it is a much shorter, a slimmer field in the Preakness, and we only have 8 horses running in this year's Preakness. Usually the Kentucky Derby is about 20. Had a few scratches last week, or 2 weeks ago. So, Mage is the only one that ran the Derby that will run tomorrow at Pimlico. 8 horse field, as I said. Last year, just 3 Derby horses ran in the Preakness. And in 2021, that number was just 2. So, as I've already discussed, the allure of the Triple Crown is now gone. So, in order to make the field as best you can, like, you're losing steam with regard to how much casual interest there is. Because most people will not invest more time other than these 3 races. And it does appear as if the quality of these races is getting worse, when we already know that the Preakness field is going to be half, or maybe even, you know, more than half of the Kentucky Derby will not run. Or even just, you know, the total size of the race will be that much smaller. And now, you don't have that Triple Crown allure, so it just feels like the Preakness this year is, and probably I think a lot of people felt this way last year and the year before, it just doesn't seem to be as fun, as must-see. Because the allure of that, will this horse win a triple crown, isn't quite the same anymore. And the field, if you pay even a little bit of attention, you know that this is a brand new field in the race. So how do you change that? How do you get to a point when we can at least... Because if you're the sport of horse racing, you want these to be your... These are your three big races, and you have the Breeders' Cup in the fall. But you want there to be the most eyeballs on your sport this time of year, meaning you want the races to be the best they can be. So if you have to add another week in between the Derby and the Preakness, if that would increase the eyeballs on your sport, and if that would increase the participation from Derby to Preakness, then it feels like a no-brainer. I'll be honest, if these races were more spread out, I think in a way you could capitalize on the fact that, you know, we're entering a time when sports are going to slow down pretty soon. Once we crown our champions in the NBA and the NHL, it's just baseball for a good 3 months. So if you bumped these races back and put more time in between the rest of the Triple Crown, you could maybe have a better field in the races, and you could maybe run the races at times of the year when there wasn't as much going on. Like, you could be the center of attention. And that might say more about the fact that there aren't a ton of other viewing options for sports fans. But it just feels like the sport has just... The Triple Crown was won, and the quality of the races hasn't been as good because of the fact that we don't have a lot of returnees and returning horses after the Kentucky Derby. And that's that. And I don't think you should... Like, baseball made a lot of changes to the way the game was played, and I think a lot of them have been good. So make some changes to the schedule or, like, whatever you need to do to get the best horses in the field every year, you should probably do. Because your sport already is a very casual, okay, if it's on, I'll watch it type of sport. And that's not changing when the field in the Preakness Stakes is seven newbies and the Kentucky Derby winner. Matter of fact, I think a lot of people would say if Mage wins tomorrow, well, brand new field. How much credit do we even, you know, owe to this horse for winning against a bunch of horses that weren't in the Kentucky Derby? So we'll see what happens here. But I thought that the draw for horse racing was the Triple Crown. And there probably are some people that are like, well, I saw that. I'm out. There's not anything else to see with this sport because I've already seen the top achievement in the sport transpire. But I still think you can try and spruce up the field a little bit more with these races. I mean, again, I usually watch the races. I'm not that interested in the Preakness tomorrow. And, you know, I'll probably watch the PGA Championship going on at the same time. Speaking of the PGA Championship, we will check in on the PGA Championship coming up on the other side as the second round looks like it's a little bit wet, a little rainy perhaps, but they're playing still right now at Oak Hill. So we'll check in on the leaderboard there. And then we got our Friday benchmarks to get to. Our 10th inning segment is coming up in about 20 minutes. John Corrales will join the show, as well as the Boston Celtics look to try and get even in the Eastern Conference Finals. John will join in to talk about that matchup with the Miami Heat. And, of course, our final segment on Fridays is our Friday 5. So we will do that to get out of Dodge. Halfway home on a Friday. We are back in 5 minutes. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.